Welcome to our next episode of
Fandom
Family
Chats.
This is a production of Family Fan Clubs on Facebook. You can find us all over Facebook. You can find us all over social media under Fandom Family Chats. Look us up, get dialed in, get plugged in, and get ready to listen to some crazy people talk crazy stuff. Hey guys, I'm Maureen.
I'm Jeanette.
I'm Tiffany.
I'm Amanda.
And today we're joined with 911 Lone Stars, Mark Elias.
Hello, everybody. How y'all doing today?
Good. How are you?
Good. I can't really complain. I mean, it's almost the holidays. It's raining in LA, which is rare and nice. Oh. Yeah.
Today I just watched the volcano episode of 911 Lone Star, which was a very hard episode. So rain is a good thing compared to that.
Not a good episode for him, probably. Yeah.
Just jump right into it then.
I'm from Wisconsin, so all the southern things just kind of like California and Texas are like the same sort of climate to me. It all matches.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Southern California and Texas, right? Because I think like Northern California, they have standard rain, I guess. I don't know.
Seasons.
Yeah, they've got like at least two seasons.
See, in the frigid north, we're all freezing. But what I didn't know until just a couple days ago, you were the groom on the original 911 too. And I didn't realize that until a couple nights ago. Oh yeah.
Yeah, I did an episode of the LA 911. And then actually one of the filmmakers or somebody who was working in the crew there, I think he, between LA 911 and the 911 Lone Star, they kind of approached me because they were doing like this short film and they got Peter Krause from the LA 911 and Angela Bassett was doing the narration for this film. And then they got Kenneth Choi from also the LA 911. I mean, this was before the Lone Star one even came about. And then I think there was a girl who played a couple episode arc on it. And so she and I ended up being the leads in this film. And then Peter and Kenneth were in it. And Angela did the narration. Ended up being this great little short film. But it all came about from that episode.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Cool.
I do like the storyline of that episode that you were wrongfully accused of stealing your own car because you left your bride at the altar.
It felt very on brand.
That's good to know.
That's not revealing of anything in my past, but you know, the producer and I kind of like, we laughed about it a little bit after that, and then I stayed in touch with him, and I was interning for my agent at the time, and saw the Lone Star sort of the breakdown come out, and I think I just messaged him and was super just like pretty chill, just like, hey, you know, if I don't know what you're thinking for this role, but I'd love to get the opportunity to read for it. And then he was like, yeah. And then I got the audition on a Friday, and it was on a Monday morning. And so I remember like I just worked on it the entire weekend, and like I wouldn't want to be distracted by anything. So I would like go and work on it like literally at Starbucks, where like every distraction could come through, and see how focused I could stay on it, so that whatever happens the audition, I'm just locked in. And I walked in there Monday morning and did one take and knocked it out, and they kind of had one adjustment, and I did it again, but I left being like, well, I did exactly what I wanted to do, so what happens from there isn't up to me. But then you know, a couple of weeks went by and I hadn't heard anything. And then I auditioned for this show called Lucifer. That was a great audition too. And then time went by, I didn't hear anything. And then I got this message that I got the Lucifer role, and I got super excited. And so I was like sharing the news with people. And then the producer I talked to for Lone Star, he actually was like, well, we just locked in Liv Tyler. So actually I just sent in you as my pick for that role, for Tim Rosewater. And like in the span of 20 minutes, I booked like two different shows. It's pretty,
oh wow,
it happened one after another. Wow. You know, it turned out I was able to do both of them, but it was kind of one of those things where it's like a waterfall where you think like, I'm doing great work, what's going on? And then it's like, boom, boom, boom. Things kind of line up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was a really good day for you.
Yeah.
Really great 20 minutes.
The rest of the day,
The rest of the day was forgettable.
So when did you like decide that you wanted to pursue acting as a career? Was it something that you'd always wanted to do? Or
I think like when I was, I don't know what grade I was in, but I saw this Matt Damon movie called Good Will Hunting. And I remember seeing that and thinking like, that's something that I could do. And I feel like I know like that character and that type of role. But I grew up, I grew up in Philadelphia where it's kind of not something that people really do. It's like you kind of just play sports. So I wasn't sure about it, but I kind of had the sense then that it was like, oh, I like this. And then I started tracking like Dustin Hoffman's early career where he started just doing completely different roles, you know, like from Midnight Cowboy to The Graduate, et cetera, et cetera. And so I started, became really fascinated by that. And I was like, he just converts to a different character in every movie. And so it was kind of a gradual thing. Like I wasn't sure that it's something that you were really able to do. But those things kind of gave me clues. And then I always sort of enjoyed storytelling of like, there's several movies that you see as a kid where you just go, I did not see that ending coming and stuff like that. So I think it all kind of like slowly pieced together. And then I had moved to LA and started studying at the Beverly Hills Playhouse and was starting to really realize this is definitely like something that feels very natural for me and became really gratifying. And so I kind of just started pursuing it and didn't know anybody or anything in LA and just had to kind of like learn one step at a time what, you know, what to do and what's, what, you know, what are the best practices and how to just kind of keep building a resume.
Was there any like companies or any like improv or something like that that you joined in LA to kind of help keep you on point and on task what you were out there to do?
I definitely made a point to always be studying somewhere. So I studied at Beverly Hills Playhouse for a while, which gave a very good foundation for me for sort of scene study and preparation for acting. And I think that it also lent itself a lot more to theater, which was great. But over time I started, I explored different scene study classes, different auditioning type classes. And then also I studied for a little while at Second City doing improv. I did a little bit of Groundlings and like for a minute I was at UCB, but really most of the improv that I did for a long duration of time was with Second City. So there was that. And then it was just like staying in a network of like, if you make sure that you're doing a play, even if it doesn't pay, and then make sure that you're auditioning for stuff, even if it's smaller things, just to keep yourself working. So I just kind of made sure that you're always kind of working on stuff the entire time. Just keep getting better, really.
Mm-hmm. No, I know like when a lot of people you see and when you watch movies of people going to Hollywood to make it big, it's, you get like this inflated sense of, oh, that must be what it's really like. Guessing it's not an accurate depiction. So when you made the move from Philadelphia to LA, what were you expecting when you went out there? Did it meet your expectations? Did you do something to make sure it did or didn't? If that makes any sense, how I just wrote that. That's
such a good question. The way it's depicted in the movies is never how it is. Like, even if somebody's like, oh my God, they're an overnight sensation, you're like, well, no, there's actually like, it takes 20 years or 10 years to be an overnight sensation. And if somebody walks off the bus here and gets cast in something, it's, the odds are astronomical. So it tends to, I think you just have to sort of plot out and be like, it's going to take X amount of time, or you're just like, this is what I want to do with my life. And it is what it is. And you just, I think it was, it wasn't De Niro, but it was somebody, I think it was Al Pacino that had said, like, you know, they were doing student films and he's like, you just don't ever plan to be famous. Like, you just plan to be like poor or broke the rest of your life or whatever. But if it's what you want, you just really have to stay focused on those goals and like try and make attainable goals to reach. So it's not just a huge long shot, right? Cause you really are climbing a mountain. So you take it sort of one little hill at a time. But I think that was a big thing. Cause I mean, I didn't know anybody in LA. I didn't have like an uncle who was in the business or anything like that. And so I had to learn like what a headshot was and like how to get an agent and then how to audition and build a reel. And then you build a reel and you do student films and you do free, you know, short films and stuff like that. And then you do a bad horror film or two, and then you go, hey, well, now I'm motivated to never do that again. And then you have to build and nurture relationships, which I think like some people have the relationships, but they don't have the drive to do the craft. And then there's people that are incredibly gifted at the craft, but have no motivation whatsoever to build relationships and have no business sense. So you kind of have to have like this juggling of all that. And it sort of took time to sort that out, because I think especially when you're like here in your early 20s, everything is so like, you just don't know. It could happen tomorrow, you know, and then you just think, oh, it could just happen tomorrow. So if I just do enough today, but it's never that. It's like, it's got to be like a long-term, I think it has to be just like a long-term thing. Cause I know people like, I hung out a bunch of times with a circle of actors that started out in Disney, or they were friends with like people that worked on Disney shows. And one of them was at the time was Evan Peters, and he hadn't done, I mean, he wasn't even on American Horror Story at the time, I don't think. And so, and we just had conversations about acting and stuff like that. And he had been doing it since he was like maybe 10.
Oh, wow.
So he had quite a head start on most people. But you see that they're sort of in it for the long haul. And it's not about that immediate thing of like, oh man, if I just get this one next role, it's going to change my life. And the reality is like, it's a trajectory. So, right. So you don't, it's not really going to change your life. Mm-hmm. Nothing. The one thing is going to change your life, but like they add up to pieces that will change to the career that you want to have.
Yeah.
So it was kind of just like also being in that circle of friends and seeing how other people that have been around the business longer kind of handle that, which, cause it's kind of huge. And then you go, oh, okay, now I see how like there's a trajectory.
Mm-hmm. So it's equal parts talent, because you are talented, and then there's discernment that you really have to be able to tap into, and then there's a network of people that you got to surround yourself to encourage you to keep going if that's, you know, what you want to do.
I think so. I mean, I think part of it too is I really think that you kind of have to decide like what it is you want to do. Like if you want to be on Saturday Night Live, there's like a path for that. If you want to do, you know, hour-long dramas, there's sort of a path for that. Like you don't go to improv schools if you want to do hour-long drama, right? Like there, I think the more specific you are with the goals that you want to be, the more easier it is to break in a way that opens doors. You know, like Melissa McCarthy can do whatever she wants now, but she was doing straight up comedy before and then broke through so big. So I think part of it, like when I tell people that are sort of new here or whatever, it's like, I really think that you should just like focus on mm-hmm. what it is that you want to do, because it makes it easier to go for that. Mm-hmm. Instead of like, okay, well, I'm doing improv tonight and then tomorrow, it's like this like scene study class, and then it's Miser the next night. And you're like, but where are you focusing your networking? Yeah. Where are you focusing your marketing? Where it's kind of a whole, you kind of have to decide, you know, because I grew up loving movies and I was like, I want to do really good indie films, but there's a path for that. You've got to be established on TV in order to do that, or you have to be able to make them yourself in order to do that. So I think the biggest thing is deciding where yourself specifically being, and then build towards that.
That makes sense.
Good advice. Yeah.
That's just good advice in general, actually. I'm thinking like four different avenues in my head that, oh, I should probably start doing that.
Life. Life lessons.
So tell us about your like time on set with Lone Star, like what it was like there, filming process, things like that.
I think I can remember the very first day that we all had to be on set, and it was to take country line dancing lessons, because the first episode, I'm not sure what episode it was, but like mm-hmm. you walk into this room and there's like all these other people and you're like, I don't know. Nobody knew anything at that point. Like, you're just like, I don't know. Like Rob Lowe's not in the room, but you're just like, I don't know who these people are. So you're just kind of like, hi. Whatever, and you're talking to people, but you're like, I don't know if you're an actor, I don't know what's going on. And then you've kind of meet people, and then you do the, you know, everybody gets incredibly embarrassed by their poor dancing skills, and it's just, it was very difficult. So after that, it's like, well, we did that, then we're all now we're good, because we've just been through that really embarrassing attempt to learn how to dance. And then it turned out to be no big deal, and they had people that actually knew what they were doing dancing, so you could kind of, yeah, that's always, it was, that was great. But then you know, and we sat around, I remember sitting around just like in a circle of like sort of the main cast members and everybody just talking about like how they sort of got that role or kind of where their headspace was and about the fallacies that we see some actors making along the way. And it sort of became, and then it, and also because I think a lot of us were so different, but also in sort of the same position or maybe like somewhat of the same age range, that like the core group of us became friends like very quickly and hung out. And just sort of, it just became like, it wasn't just like going to set. The thing is that it wasn't just like, oh, I'm going to set up a show. It was like, I get to hang out with like people that are like these new friends, and it's supposed to be a big show. So we're all, everybody's in it and gung ho. And even when you have to be there at 4 a.m. and you don't start shooting until like this one day, where Rihanna and I weren't going to shoot until, we didn't end up shooting until 2 p.m. and we had been there since like 5, and it was like, that's a lot of time we could have slept in. But
that's the important part.
I mean, it was like, we definitely, that's like an 8-hour shift that most people work at a job that we could have been sleeping. But like, you kind of weather the storm, because it's like the show has to find its feet, production has to find its feet. I mean, it just became sort of transcendent of like, you know that you're going to be communing with other people and creating, not like some shows where it's like these two people, like the two leads, hate each other, so you're like, I'm just going to sit over here. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, something where sometimes it's like there's a chemistry when the camera starts rolling, but then other than that, people just don't care, and nobody was sort of jaded and disaffected. Everybody was very excited. So the energy was really strong. It ended up being great, like just great, like as far as the energy of people wanting to work together. And then also socially, you have somebody to pick up the phone and call or go hang out with. And it's not like you're hanging out with a coworker you don't want to. It's like, I absolutely wanted to hang out with everybody. So it made a big difference to me. We became very close very quickly, which is, I think, rare.
And do you keep in touch with them now that you're, you know, not on the show anymore? Are there...
Yeah, I mean, there's a core group of, I think there's like several that like I keep in really close touch with, and try and sort of just at least, you know, talk once a week. I mean, everybody's busy if you're shooting another show, or if you're like doing development on some stuff, or even if you're just away on vacation, like people kind of get scattered. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's important to like touch base with people just to sort of tap them on the shoulder. But you know, overall, it's like it's weird. It's like I've never been on a show or a movie where people are like, oh my God, yeah, let's hang out. It's always, it'll be like, they won't respond, or like you get hit up by someone and you're like, they're so obnoxious that I wouldn't hang out with, you know, like it's not that at all. So it's great. It's rare. Like I said, it's rare. It's really, I mean, the chemistry is like real, you know, after when they call cut, it's like people are still kind of, you know, joking around, not in a negative way, but it's like, there's still a banter. There's still an energy. We have fun. We had fun just hanging out on set in general. So, I mean, there's really nothing bad. I mean, that energy and that synergy may change over time. I suspect that generally it does, especially when a show has a large amount of success. But you know what I mean? It couldn't be better. It's a great precedent to set, you know, because you go to the next set I'm going to be on in a large role, like as a regular character. I want to bring that type of energy and synergy to that set too.
Mm-hmm. And I think we talk about this when we podcast about some of our other drama, like we do The Resident, and there's this one character we always talk about. The Resident is a medical drama that's an hour, it's heavy, there's things that are happening that are sad, and there's this one character, Dr. Nolan, who brings the levity, and I think that's what your character does. I like that about your character, and even in the episode, as sad as it was that I watched today, I cannot remember your EMT partner in that show. But she had said that you were like Buster Keaton, a little weird, but he was a really good EMT. And I think that describes your character perfectly. And that's what I liked about your character is this is a drama. There are bad things that happen in the show. There are heavy things that happen, but your character and the way you portrayed it was able to bring levity to it and a little quirk. It didn't have to be all heavy all the time.
I love that. I mean, that's really funny because the showrunner and I actually bonded over Buster Keaton.
Oh, really?
Months, maybe, well, years ago, 2 years ago, because I was like, oh, well, it all started a long time ago. So, Maureen, pull up a seat and pack a lunch. I'm about to tell you a long story.
Yes, please.
I've always sort of had like this affinity for Buster Keaton, but also Charlie Chaplin. And I wrote a short film years ago that I played a Charlie Chaplin. Basically, the premise is it's the guy who plays Charlie Chaplin on Hollywood Boulevard, and he's in love with the girl who plays Marilyn Monroe, but she's dating the guy who plays Superman. Mm-hmm. It's a black and white Chaplin style film, you know, and he's got to use the Chaplin charm to sort of charm this girl to get her to fall in love with him. And I just have had, it's just like this thing that I've always kind of been really interested in. And I read a biography on Buster Keaton and I was like, man, I want to play Buster Keaton someday. Like, I think that there's that movie and there's that role for me out there that I could really do something with. And so we had chatted about that a while ago and he's like, I'm a huge Buster Keaton fan too. And so we kind of bandied that around, and like I found some pictures of Buster Keaton and like playing with just poses and stuff like that, just to be like, how to fall into this character, how to fall into that world. Mm-hmm. And so when they put that in there, it was like a nice sort of nod and a nice like wrapping it up to like the conversations that we had and all that. But also like Brianna and I had developed a really strong friendship and relationship off camera too. So everything that for me, like watching that episode, like if you could feel more than I couldn't look at it objectively. Like you could feel, you watch it and you feel something between them. But mm-hmm. for me, it was like, I'm also watching that sort of history that we developed over time and the friendship that we had over time. And so it felt very impactful for me as well. Like it wasn't just watching another episode of a show that you've been in.
Yeah. Well, that'll explain the realness too, because I mean, her tears and as sad as she was felt very real. So that, I mean, it was really well, that helps that you have that relationship that can sort of make that flow on the screen.
Yeah, we had some conversations. She tapped into something great there, but it's like we had conversations that are like, you go so deep that you're just like, what she put out there is like 100%. I would say, I would venture to guess that there is nothing disingenuous about her performance any second on camera, you know, for that. It's pretty special. It's sad to leave the show. It sucks to be leaving it. And, you're always looking for other things and you go, well, there's always other things that are gonna come up, but it felt like that's the kind of thing that you could really enjoy for a while, not like some sets where you're like, this is good, but also like it's very combustible and like I don't know how long I'd be able to take some of these people. It's just not like that. Definitely like felt like a family. So I think that probably resonates off the screen probably pretty often, I would assume. But
yeah,
certainly in this energy that we had, I think it went a long way.
And it's nice that they put that Buster Keaton in there to say goodbye to you. So you know that it's like, they're also sad to see you go. So it's nice that you have, if you have to leave a show, that's the way to do it, right? Where the writers and the directors are sad that you're leaving the show and they put in a personal part of your relationship. That was nice.
Yeah. It was really, I mean, that part was touching. I don't think that's the last time. I feel very strongly that that's not the last time that Buster Keaton is going to be in my sort of zeitgeist energy. So it was a great little nod to it. I think I really feel strongly that it's probably like a nod to the future as well.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't have anything in cooking in that regard, but I'm saying that I think that it's going to come to me in some way, shape or form.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that Charlie Chaplin, now that sounds really interesting to me. Is that something that is out there that anyone can watch? Or is that something you just did for school? Or because that sounds like a really interesting plot.
It is on Vimeo somewhere.
I wrote that down.
And I could find the link and send it to y'all.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Because it sounds super interesting.
It does.
Yeah, it does.
It was really fun. Yeah. We shot it in like 2 days and we like snuck around Hollywood Boulevard and didn't. I shouldn't say that we didn't pay for a permit, so maybe we did, but maybe we didn't.
What are you doing about now?
Yeah,
exactly. You said you wrote that.
Yeah, I wrote. So I spent a decent amount of time, like while I was getting like smaller credits, one day credits on other TV shows. I started sort of exploring writing, and I wrote like a web series. We put it on YouTube and it was fun and it got a lot of views. And then I wrote another web series and we didn't get as many episodes out as we wanted to. And it had a decent amount of views too. And then I thought, well, web series aren't really a thing that gets people. Web series was a thing for like a minute, and then now it's kind of not a thing. And then I had that idea for years for that short film, and finally it was like, I met a director that wanted to direct it, and I sort of was like, we're going to make it. And then that sort of got me on the filmmaking path. So I made that short film. And then I had been writing, playing around with writing features. And so I'd written a couple, and I went into this crazy path of crowdfunding, which is just so much work, and made a feature for $50,000, and then did it again, made another feature for $50,000. And then I ended up on Lone Star. And then now I'm like actually raising investor funds for a feature that I think that we'll probably be shooting, knock on wood, in the spring. So it's sort of like, it's been a path for me. It's also been a growth path of like learning storytelling and learning how to tell a story, write a script in an effective way, and then the proving ground of making it for no money, making it, it takes years to get it done because there's just not enough money. And then now pitching investors and getting on a Zoom with them and telling them like, this is how the film industry works, and getting an actual budget to go shoot a feature, even if it's an indie feature. It's just that it can kind of change your career, I think, over time, you know. It'll be my third feature that I've written and gotten funded in some way, shape, or form. And so that kind of builds up and builds momentum over time. I mean, I really believe in the power of momentum. So for me, I think it's sort of like, it's got to be a natural progression, but I think it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. So you're kind of getting, are you getting with these features, are you getting back in those indie roots you originally were really interested in?
Yeah. I mean, it's, and the first one was so rewarding because it was this sort of James Dean-ish type of role that I had always really liked, and it's very dark, and it had, you know, it's very dark and dramatic, and they had, it filled something in me that was like that. And then the next one, it became like, this is more of like, it's a guy who's sort of on the spectrum, but he's a artificial intelligence software programmer. And so it really appealed to this like sort of that part of me that probably is on the spectrum a little bit, and diving into that character became like just a character study. So it's so much work to get it up and running, but then once you get it and the camera's rolling, it's like, this is kind of what I've always wanted to do. And I'm writing and creating content that like, I also want to see, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not like, sometimes you see stuff and you're like, that got made. This is, you know, for me, I'm like, there's a greater value in making something that I think is quality content, but also fulfilling those artist needs in me that I wanted to see and I'm creating for myself.
Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, there's not everyone that you've talked about is like, okay, I want to go see that. So now you gotta go like stalk your IMDb profile and find out all the things you wrote and find those. Because James Dean, awesome. That's an awesome, like, even though it's not about him, that kind of physicality and that kind of storyline that he was drawn to are things that are really, really interesting. So I want to go see them.
Yeah, the that very, like, I think I'm losing internet. Oh, there we go. Yeah, so Golden Boy was the first one that we made, and that has that very, I think that James Dean has a quality that he was just very, the deepness with which he felt things felt tied to, I think, especially like family members and maybe father figures and stuff like that, really resonated in this movie called Golden Boy. It's not quite out yet. It's still being shopped around. And then that, like I said earlier, that Dustin Hoffman thing where you can just crawl into another role. And there's a movie, it's called Boy Makes Girl, and it's just being finished. I think in the next couple of weeks it'll be finished. And that's like, so it's a science fiction love story, but it's a guy who's on the spectrum who creates a childlike version of a lifelike version of his childhood therapist to talk to. And she's artificial intelligence in a human body. So it develops into a relationship. And so, yeah, for me, it's just like, that was something where it's like, I wanted to crawl into that role, and it's definitely, you know, it's definitely like a sci-fi love story. So it's like you're blessed to be able to make the stuff that you want to make, but at the same time, it's raising funds is like the trade-off. You've got to do it mm-hmm. yourself.
Yeah.
But those, you know, those are the first two. And then that short film that I made where I played Chaplin, and I'm like, I really can't argue with like the content that I'm creating and the roles that I get to play. Whereas if it was a studio film, they'd be, you know, who can we get Ryan Gosling for this role? You know? And so sometimes you're like, well, yeah, if the studio had this and they got Ryan Gosling for that role, then I'd take a smaller role. But the circumstances before where I was an absolute unknown that was just doing like day player mm-hmm. roles on TV shows. And now Lone Star was a big thing, and that helps a lot. But you know, I'm also, it's like, you also kind of have to build for the future. So it's like, I've got this new one that we're going to shoot. That's like a comedy crime. And it's sort of like Scott Pilgrim versus the World, with a little bit of Deadpool's witty irreverence slapped in there. It's fun. It's fast. And I think that, you know, it's going to be a pretty commercial indie film, and got a good team. I kind of took the time to build around and done a lot of outreach for it. So I think all signs are pointing towards that being the next big step. And then you got to kind of develop other stuff in the meantime. I'm like, mm-hmm. what else could I be planning in the back of my head that I want to do that for me, or that I want to be able to sell and have a part in? So that part of like taking control of your career gives you a certain amount of freedom, because you're mm-hmm. not just like, well, what's the next thing that I'm going to get to audition for?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Is there anyone that you've worked with that you would love to work with before, or even anyone that you haven't worked with that you would love to work with?
I think I would love to work with Robert Downey Jr.
That's a dream.
I mean, first of all, he's played Charlie Chaplin before.
Oh yeah, he did.
He did.
Yeah. I think that we might have some similar energy, and I think that it could be really interesting I think it'd be great. I think it'd be amazing to play like his brother or something, but I think he's probably in the top of my list. You know, Robert Downey Jr., Anthony Hopkins, like huge. Anthony Hopkins, great one. Cool. There's always like kind of have like a mental list, but there's some shows, like oftentimes you'll see a show and be like, well, I want to be on that show. Like, I'd love to be on that show. But I think for me, for a long time, it was like Dustin Hoffman as a kid, Robert Downey Jr. And then some of the greats you see, Anthony Hopkins, you're just like, that's kind of the pinnacle, I think. You know, working with Anthony Hopkins puts you in like a stratosphere, or Gary Oldman. Like, I had several callbacks actually to play Charlie Chaplin in the last David Fincher movie with Gary Oldman. And so it was like, a callback and then a callback and then a callback, and then it didn't punch through, but it was right when I got Lone Star, so it wasn't that bad. But also you're like, they saw the short film that I created where I played Chaplin. I got the audition because of the short film.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, did the work, and you get down the road to the point where it's basically you or somebody else. And so again, it just goes to show that creating your own content, really, it's never, at some point, it's not all for naught, because 3 years later, you get an audition for the role that you created and put it on tape yourself. But yeah, I mean, I think that those are kind of the, I think Gary Oldman is amazing. Anthony Hopkins, Robert Downey Jr., Dustin Hoffman. Those are kind of like my top, I think, ones that I want to work with.
It's a good group right there.
Yeah. It is. You mentioned like though, that
all of them.
Yeah, right.
Let's just do a short film with you and those four. Right, nobody else in it.
Yeah. They're not doing anything, right? I'm not doing anything.
Yeah. You mentioned that there's like shows you would want to be on. What are some of your like favorite shows that you would love a chance to be a part of?
Oh my gosh. You guys, Succession. I mean, Succession just blew me away. I really, really enjoyed Succession. I would say, I think, drawing a blank on the other shows, I mean, there was a couple that I saw during the pandemic. Killing Eve was pretty great. I don't know if that's still going on, but I really enjoyed Killing Eve. But I think Succession is probably my favorite show right now. There's a really funny show called Southside that I saw on HBO that I think is hilarious. Really enjoyed that. I mean, I watch so much stuff. I finally started watching The Americans, which I know is like years old now.
That's on my list. I still haven't watched that either, but that's been on my list for years.
The writing is so good. The writing is so good. But I think, yeah, I mean, Succession is probably like the number one thing that comes to my mind. It doesn't feel like there's kind of a Breaking Bad out there right now. You know, mm-hmm. that would have been my answer a couple of years ago, but now it's Succession to me is just like something like that. Or, you know, I think Brad Inglesby did the Mayor of Easttown. We actually went to Tradition Easttown Middle School together. He's a couple years ahead of me. I'm not sure. I didn't really know him, but he created Mayor of Easttown. And I'm like, you know, I grew up in that area, so I know the area quite well. And I think that there'll probably be an influx of more sort of Philadelphia related stories that, mm-hmm. That like I could see myself living in that world. But yeah, I mean, Billions is another great show. God, Billions would be amazing to be on. Mm-hmm. Paul Giamatti's incredible. The writing on that show is great. Stuff like that, I think that really interests me. Either like down and dirty sort of swampland drama stuff, or like that sort of almost like intangibly insane rich society where people are just mm-hmm. thinking almost by each other, you know, or yeah. like Yellowstone, where it's like they're all just so cutthroat. You're like, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
How crazy would it be? How fun would it be to play in that world?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So or another 911 spinoff. And
there, you know, yes.
That we would be all for that.
Perfect.
Do that, absolutely.
Water twin or something.
Yeah.
I was interviewing a guy once who had been killed off of a show, like you were. And we were talking about how if there's a second season, we could just do like a Dallas style thing where he could just come back to life like JR did, or like somebody did on that show. We could just make that happen. Or we could create a different character for you, but still. I think now though, if you come up with another 911, you have to be on it because you've been on every 911 so far.
That's true. That's See? True. I'll have to call somebody and tell them that, you know.
You're gonna add an addendum to your contract.
It has to be. I think another fun one would probably be American Horror Story. Like, I think, I don't know. It's not the show that like I will go grappling for, but like at the same time, you're like, that's always a fun ride. So I think like American Horror Story could be a good time. I think that would be really fun. Yeah, I think that's, I see stuff and I'm like, yeah, I want to do that. And then you know, you're like, yeah, no, wait, I want to do that. No, it'd be fun to do that. I think a really good, you know, a really well-written single camera comedy can be so much fun just to make people laugh all the time. But yeah, I think like some of those shows, I think some of those dramas just would be really incredible. I mean, mm-hmm. some of the best writing out there.
Yeah. Well, you did guest star on another one of the shows that we cover. And I wanted to ask you about it, on Teen Wolf. And I know you had just a small part, and I honestly didn't realize it was you until I was looking up, because I'd seen Lone Star so much, you know, I'd seen Teen Wolf a long, long time ago. So I went back and watched it again. I know it was a small part, but what was it like? I mean, that being a supernatural show, and I'm not even sure what kind of creature you were. I don't know if I could say, but.
So it was the first Wendigo character. They're like, we're introducing these characters. He's a Wendigo. And of course, okay. I'm like, yeah, totally. And then I'm like looking it up because I'm like, I don't know what that is. You know, and then you're like, yeah, no, it's awesome. The first Wendigo is going to be great. And then you read it and you're also like, this character could like definitely come back. So I was disappointed when it didn't. But
yeah.
It was crazy funky on that. Oh. It was
great. Yeah.
It could always happen again. Yeah. But it was a lot of fun. Like I was like, wow, when I saw it on TV, I was like, this is better than what I imagined it would look like mm-hmm. in my head. So it was disappointing to not come back with that character, but it looked great. It was super fun to play that role. I mean, I think I actually, it's very random, but like I was on set for it and one of the producers came up to me and it was like, it's me, Eric, or whatever. And I was like, I don't know. So like years ago, I had done like a pilot presentation where it's basically like a diversity program where like a writer and several other writers produce something that sort of is done live for several network executives. And so it was like this boarding school thing. And there was like, there's the two girls and myself did this scene for like these network executives and kind of stayed in touch with these guys and whatever. And then he ends up producing that show. And he was like, I just want to tell you that like I think he said it was like the first time everybody got the audition and everybody was like, he's the number one pick. He's number one pick. It wasn't like, oh, we're not sure. Every single person that weighed in on it was like, he's the guy, he's the guy, he's the guy, he's the guy for that role. And it was like, and I was like, man, it's just so fun to play that type where he's like unassuming, but then also like his mental damage makes him sort of not really a serial killer, but like there's something that he has to feed off of.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're like, it's the first Wendigo characters being introduced. And you're like, that could be awesome. That could be huge.
Yeah.
That was really fun. I even got to do my own stunts on that. Like they had a stunt guy come in and he actually kind of looked like, from the back, you're like, there's no way you could tell a difference. But then there was like downtime and he's like, I'm going to teach you how to do this. And so we did it and we did it, we did it, we did it. And I like learned it. And then they're like, okay, we're going to shoot it. And then I was like, I think I can do it. I think I'm just going to give it a shot. And we did it. And then it ended up being in the, and of course they add the sound effects and they add the angles to make it seem whatever. But it just was like, I ended up doing my own stunts on that. And it was like, it was so fun. It was like a whole thing, you know, it was great. It was so much fun.
Awesome. That was one where during the pandemic for us, what happened is we now have 15 different shows that we cover, because during the pandemic, Jeanette and Shelby started all these Facebook groups about all these shows that they like, and then we all kind of jumped on board, and the list just keeps growing. From pandemic, we're just used to binge watching all of these shows, and now we can't stop. But Teen Wolf was one of them that she got us on there. 911 is when we just started that group this month, because everyone in our podcasting group was like, you have to watch this show. And we have two people from Austin Austin area who are on there like, it's so good. It's so good. You have to watch it. So it was just all that came out of the pandemic. Did something like that sort of happen for you? Because you couldn't work during the pandemic, I imagine. There's a lot of things that were shut down. Productions were shut down. You didn't have a lot of access. Is that something that you kind of had to step into and kind of hone a craft, maybe find a different direction you wanted to move in?
I mean, I think part of it was we were lied to, and people were like, oh, we're just going to shut the world down for 2 weeks. And you're like, I can manage 2 weeks. And then
we all thought.
Yeah. Right. We're like, we can do this. We can all do this. Everybody here can do 2 weeks of nothing. Right. And then, so you start watching I watched 6 hours of TV a day. I was like, well, I've got all of these lists on Hulu, Netflix, Amazon, whatever. And then it obviously drags on and you go, at some point I've got to adjust to life and make some sort of progress. but like it was 6 hours of TV a day. So I blew through everything that was on every list that I had. Like I said, somebody said once Killing Eve is a great show. So I had it on a list and I started watching. I was like, no, this is a really good show.
And what show is that? Like,
Killing Eve.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean,
Andrew.
Yeah.
I mean, so, you know, and then I watched everything that you could think of and stuff that had been on my lists for like years, just blew through all of that. And then you hit a point where you're like, there's no more stuff on the lists. And the only thing I could do at that time is like, you can't do any acting stuff because filming was even harder because they were trying to figure out how do you even film? What is COVID protocol? Mm-hmm. You know, there was a point where we didn't even know about masks and everybody was wearing gloves. So it was even beyond that. Once past the mask thing, then it became, oh, how do we manage to do stuff? But the film industry was so far behind that I was like, well, I'm going to rewrite the script that I had. And then I started developing this other idea. And then I got like sort of a writing mentor who was really great and sort of helped me recraft, both the scripts. And then I started reaching out to investors because I was like, well, there's people that are going to answer emails that won't answer emails before. They wouldn't, they're just too busy. And just started a spreadsheet, started reaching out to angel investors that might not even have any experience in the entertainment business and just say, hey, I'm making this film. I was on this show. We're looking for investment money. And then just started stacking up the yeses. And it's just a shot in the dark to see who it resonates with. And I just tried to be as productive as I could, working on plays just to stay ready and sharp and doing outreach and doing rewrites. And so I found I became fairly busy and a little more fulfilled than the busyness of the LA lifestyle kind of went away because nobody's going outside. So for me, that ended up being more fulfilling, but I also did, literally watch at the beginning for probably 3 months. It was like 6 hours of TV a day. It was crazy. Yeah.
It's about what we were, but we were hiding from our kids. So
yeah.
Okay, so kind of one of the last questions that we ask everybody is, what are your projects that are about to come out? What do you want to promote, and all your social links so we know who's you?
So that one's easy. I'm on Instagram and I'm pretty sure it's just Mark Elias. Mm-hmm. Instagram hasn't, it hasn't changed. It's still there. Yeah. It's just at Mark Elias on Instagram. I don't really tweet much, but I am on Twitter. But honestly, anything that I'm putting out there probably comes through Instagram. I would say Golden Boy, I don't know where it's at. They're shopping for a distribution deal, so it's finished, but it's going to be out there at some point. Boy Makes Girl is the science fiction love story that I think will probably be out there in the next couple months. This next one that I'm developing to shoot, hopefully in March, is called We Could Be Heroes. It's definitely like an odd couple crime comedy. And that's those are kind of the main things that I have on the burner right now, as far as personal projects. Nice. TV stuff, you never know. But I've really been putting a lot of effort into that because I really want to get to the next level with my own storytelling and filmmaking. Mm-hmm. So I developed a comedy series called In Limbo that we have, there's a trailer out there sort of in the ether of the internet on Vimeo that we're doing a rewrite on the pilot for that as well. But those are kind of the big things that I've been juggling right now.
Is In Limbo going to be like a regular series on syndicated TV? Or is it like one of your web series? Or what does that look like?
No, it's not a web series. It's not going to be a web series. We shot like a teaser in sort of a first episode, and now we're doing rewrites. So the plan is to pitch it to either a production company that wants to make X amount of episodes and then sell it to a network or sell it to a streaming service. I'm not sure where that process is, honestly. We're waiting to get another rewrite done. And I have a couple people that I could probably pitch it to. But part of it is we just don't know yet. Like, there's no network backing it. So it's going to be one of those things where it'll probably get made independently and then end up on a streaming service, or we'll try and pitch it to, you know, a network like an FX or something, and maybe mm-hmm. they express interest in it. And then we build it from there.
It's crazy how much is on a streaming service now. I had a friend over the other day and we were watching regular antenna TV for the football game. And she was like, wow, it's been a long time since I saw a real commercial, because everyone watches streaming stuff now. And I prefer that because then I can straight binge it. Yep. So I like that aspect too. Well, when you have a date or something for this, if you want to send it that way, our way, we would love to promote it. And we're going to put this all in the description of the podcast too, so everyone knows. But honestly, the stuff that you're writing is stuff that I want to see. So if you have something new coming down the pike, seriously, let us know about that. If you have time, let us know about that. And we would love to promote it. We have a 911 group on Facebook. We'd love to promote it there. And we'd like to just let people know about it so we can get the word out, because I think it sounds really, really, it sounds different. And it sounds interesting.
Will be different and interesting for sure. I'll gladly reach out to y'all. We got to figure out what the next steps are with all of them. And it's, for me, I'm just learning that it's like, you just take one step at a time and make the best decision as you go. But, you know, two of them are really close to coming out. And then this next one, if all goes well, we'll be shooting in March. And so it's definitely a progression, but it's so creatively fulfilling, and they're all very different. So, I'm excited to have them sort of hit the real world and get people watching.
We're excited for that too. We want to thank Mark so much for coming on and chatting with us this past hour. And we want to let you know that if you want to reach out to us, you can find us at our email at familyfanclub2021. I create that email and I forget it all the time. familyfanclub2021@gmail.com. You can find us on our Facebook group for 911. That's 911. What is the name of that group now?
It's just 911
Family Fan Club.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's right. We usually have a name after that, but we can't do that with 911 because we cover two shows. So 911 Family Fan Club. And then you can find us on any of our socials under Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, under Fan and Family Chats. We'd love to talk. We'd love to see what you have to say. And Mark, thank you so much for coming on. You were a delight to talk with. It was fun. I enjoyed it. I learned a lot of new things to you, and it was really a joy to talk to you.
Thank you. Thank you all. I'll send you that link too, by the way.
Yes, please. That would be great. I would love to watch it. All right. You take care. Thank you so much.
All right. You too.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.